Hello and welcome to the Johnny Fallon podcast. They are off. This week, Leo Varadkar went to the park and fired the starting gun on election 2020. So that's it. We are all set for a Saturday election. Prepare for knocks on your door, endless media columns, lots of talk of numbers and transfers. Prepare for your baby to be kissed, your hand to be shook, and to be endlessly told to be happy or upset with what's in your pocket. I will be here every weekend to see how the campaign is progressing, and we have a great one to kick it all off. We even have an opinion poll. So if, like me, you are an election nerd, then sit back with your bag of potatoes and let's just enjoy it all. Okay, so in a little while, we're going to talk about that opinion poll from the Sunday Times, which was, of course, the first opinion poll and will set the tone for much of the debate. We're also going to take a look at just a couple of things that caught my eye in the papers over the last couple of days, some of your comments from Twitter, and, of course, a final look then at what now. But to get things started off, I want to take a quick overview of some of the main talking points for the parties as they kicked off straight into the election. Once Leo went to the park, how well organised were they all? How well ready was everybody for this election that they'd been talking about for months? So one would expect that everybody was prepared for it. Now, we'll start with Fine Gael, the party of government, the party that is going to dominate the agenda because they're in government. That's one of the advantages when you come into the election. There are lots of disadvantages to being in government, blamed for everything, but one of the ones that's good for you is once you hit that campaign trail, you should get the most attention because you're the ones who have the most influence over what's happening right now. So let's look at what they did well, first of all. And I found this interesting because as a follower of campaigns, there are certain things you hear all the time and you like to hear from people. One of those is about efficiency. Now, Leo Varadkar, when he won the leadership of Fine Gael, one of the things that came back from the parliamentary party was they were just surprised at how quick he hit the ground running. He was able to get those TDs lined up, but was all done very efficiently. That impressed them. And that's really what won him the leadership, because as it went on, Simon Coveney came more into his own, if you remember, in that contest. And indeed, the membership seemed to prefer Simon Coveney to Leo Varadkar. In this election, I was looking to see would we see some of those hallmarks that Fine Gael wanted from Leo Varadkar, because one of the ones they felt was that Leo is good at getting people around him who do things with a real efficiency. It's like a business. Can he bring that to our campaigns? Because sometimes Fine Gael have been a bit behind Fianna Fáil in this. They haven't been quite as professional looking once they get out there. So I think things started very much on that, with that in mind, and Fine Gael did achieve that. I heard Fia Kelly on the Irish Times podcast talk about how some of the TDs had said in Dublin they were getting their leaflets within hours, and the rest of the country it was within 24 hours. I asked some people on the ground down the country here about, is that true? They confirmed that. They said, yes, it's really efficient. We're getting stuff through. We're getting lots of support from HQ. When you ask a question, they get back to you really quickly with the details so you can fight it on the ground. Really good stuff. And I think that sounds like, yes, that efficiency has been brought to it. However, efficiency is only good if you actually know what to do with that once you get into the battle. And I think that's where some questions might arise over Leo Varadkar, and that the starting gun has been well planned. But what about after that? What do you do with that information? Are TDs prepared for, and candidates prepared for, how they use that efficiency? Not quite looking the same in that regard. And this is a worry because it goes back to that idea as to how Simon Coveney ended up being more popular with the members. As time goes on, does that efficiency begin to drift away because people aren't sure how they use that to their advantage? Well, let's look at it. And there are some interesting comments in the papers I'm going to cover that may explain some of those things. But just to start off, I mean, what does it look like for Fine Gael? For me, I've said before, time and time again, anybody listening to my previous podcasts, anybody who has been Listening to me on radio is probably sick of hearing me say this point, but I have always, since that leadership contest, had a doubt about Leo Varadkar. I've always said Fine Gael brought him in because they believed he was a really strong media personality, better than what they traditionally had. And I'm not quite convinced. I think there's elements he's good at, but then there's elements that he is really, really poor at, to be quite honest. So once we saw the campaign go off, I think the first thing everybody is noticing is something that we've talked about before. Leo is just not good with people. And that's not a good accusation on a Taoiseach and on a politician. Now, I've said this before, I think Leo, actually people like him. They don't find him that he's the type of person they find anything personally wrong with or arrogant or any of those things that they sometimes accuse people of. They just don't feel he's a leader. They don't feel like he's comfortable with them. He's not a guy you ever think, I want to sit down and have a chat with him, because he comes across as just really socially awkward. And I've always felt that unless Fine Gael got on top of that, and I think it is a fixable thing, I'm just amazed they've never done anything about it, because it comes across in the election time and time again. So give you a couple of examples of where this is, I think, hurting Fine Gael right now at this early stage, and they need to sort it out. A Taoiseach, one of the great advantages Leo Varadkar had going into this was, even on the first day of the campaign, he was meeting people from the EU, he's meeting Boris Johnson. And yet, he doesn't give off that air of gravitas. And that's normally what happens in those situations. That air of gravitas was lost on Leo. Now, why is that happening? Because, look, Leo just tends to look in front of the camera as if he's, I don't know where to put my hands, I don't know where to stand, and I don't feel confident in myself being here. You have to address that. You have to ensure that the Taoiseach, when people see the Taoiseach, they feel that's the leader, that's the most powerful guy or girl in the room. That's the person that we're all looking towards. That's not happening at all here. And it's something that really needs to be fixed before the leadership debates happen, because people do get a sense from just your body language in those situations as to how confident you really are about what you're saying. So let's just take a couple of the incidents, as I say, that happened with Boris Johnson. You know, a great opportunity, British Prime Minister. Now, one thing I'll give Leo, one thing you could never say is that Leo would let you down in terms of how he looks or how he's presented. I really admire him for this. I have to say, he's always incredibly turned out, impeccable taste. People slag him about the socks and all that kind of thing. But you know, the guy, he dresses well, he looks well, he takes real time about, he knows what it is to look professional, and he certainly does that. On the other hand, you have Boris Johnson, who sometimes, you know, you could feel lets you down if you were a supporter of his, by he's almost dishevelled looking at times. Not always, but certainly at times. But the thing about it is, you see the two of them in a room, and Simon Coveney actually looks way more relaxed and gives off a much stronger aura of power than does Leo. Leo looks like, I'm not quite sure what I'm doing here. And that allows Boris Johnson to certainly look like he's the one who's relaxed. He's the most powerful person in the room. Let me just, because I love this kind of stuff. I love how politicians have to interact with people, and I love the power dynamic that goes on in rooms. I remember, many of you will have had similar experiences. You know, when you work in a big corporate company and you have a CEO, and the CEO comes out and all the staff are out and the CEO is going to meet you. And as an ordinary pleb on the shop floor, if you like, you're kind of a little bit nervous meeting the CEO, whatever, coming down, shaking everybody's hands. But the CEO is always relaxed, because you know what? They're the powerful one, and they know they're trying to put you at ease, and you're kind of going, thanks very much. Yeah, work's going great. And they're cracking a joke with you and moving on to the next person. And I was always fascinated by how those same CEOs, because over the years I've been involved in politics, lucky enough to have personally known a couple of Taoiseach, and I would see events where the Taoiseach of the day would be coming into the room where that CEO was, and just watch then how the dynamic changed. And suddenly the CEO was the one who was a bit looking like a school kid, waiting to shake the hand of the Taoiseach, a bit excited. And that always gave me a giggle, because perhaps behind the scenes when you're in politics and you know you're the Taoiseach and you know them well, you don't feel that. You don't need to be nervous around them. But you watch the CEO of your company being quite nervous. Always gave me a giggle. I don't get, though, that Leo is ever in that position. Leo always looks to be the one most excited to meet anybody. And that socially awkward thing, I think, is hurting the opening of Fine Gael and their campaign. It has to be, you have to be good with people. People have to feel you actually like spending time around them. And they are going to have to orchestrate a few episodes where they can prove that Leo enjoys being around people. Otherwise, that's really, really going to hurt them. And it strikes me every time I see it and I see Leo in those situations. That awkwardness, though, let's talk about the opening scenes that Fine Gael tried to orchestrate in it. And there were a couple of disasters here for them. I think they always expected some, but not quite the way it panned out. Some of the strategists are undoubtedly sitting in a room today, being first Sunday of the campaign, and saying, guys, events, dear boy, events. Because events did overtake them continually in those opening days. One of the things that I talked about in my end of year review, and I talked about some of the news items, was homelessness. And I said, you know, homelessness is a big issue. It's a big debating point. It's a big debating point for the media. However, it is, I felt, one of those issues that runs the risk of being forgotten within the election itself by the electorate. Maybe not by the media, but by the electorate. And one of the reasons for that is that, unfortunately, harsh thing to say, we're all a little bit selfish when we get into the ballot box. And most of us who will vote in this election have jobs and have homes. And therefore, we tend to put other concerns ahead of those of other people. And it becomes about our taxes, holding what we have, our jobs, what you're putting into our pocket, what you're taking away from us, our services, other services we're using, maybe the health service. But it's not about the things that don't directly affect us anymore. And that sometimes means that then media are talking about homelessness and everyone's talking about homelessness. And then we say, why didn't that become the big issue? Well, you know, at the end of the day, when people went in that ballot box, they got a little bit selfish. Now, there is one thing that can change that. And I think while homelessness may still suffer a little bit from that, it's not suffering from it this week. And that is the fact that we all have a huge guilt complex at the same time about things. And issues like homelessness do make us feel shame, particularly when those issues become personal and we can see one story from that, just one, not behind all the numbers, behind all the figures, just the evidence of one person's story. That really resonates with us and makes us think of something. And of course, this election opened with one of the most horrible, tragic stories, I think, that it could possibly happen, which was of a homeless man in a tent being cleared by a piece of heavy machinery and suffering life-altering injuries as a result. Now, that is the kind of thing that I think makes us all sit up and we certainly begin to say, hold on, we didn't sign up for that. Whatever we think about the rights and wrongs and where money should be spent or how it should be dealt with, we definitely, that's not us. That's not our society. That's not where we're going. Unfortunately, Fine Gael decided they were opening their campaign down in Monaghan. Long planned, very well planned. They're opening a machinery plant and the first photos of the campaign are going to be of Leo Varadkar on a forklift. You know, you just wonder. And here's the thing about the efficiency bit. In campaigns and in communications, in anything, you need a mix of people. Some of the most valuable people you can have are those who are organised, efficient, who are able to implement a process, who make up a plan, who follow that plan, they keep things on time. They are gold dust. They are absolutely wonderful people that keep everything going. And without them, things are a disaster. And I think Leo has a lot of them in us. That's where that efficiency comes from. But you need a mix. You also need people who thrive on chaos. Now, the people who thrive on chaos are usually the kind of people that wreck everybody else's head most of the time, because they exist in a continual state of chaos, which makes them perfectly suited to actually addressing chaos when it happens, because they're just used to it. And in an election, you live always in this state of chaos. You can never get every photo opportunity right. There are too many imponderables, too much rushing around. There's always going to be something that's going wrong. And the chaos people are the people who are able to say, hold on, I can spot that. I know how to address that after the issue. I know when we need to scrap the plan and we need to deviate from it really quickly. Fine Gael needed to deviate from a forklift picture and Leo jumping in and again in this really awkward sense of trying to figure out something to say. He said, it's quite roomy in here. You know, you need to get him out of there. You don't want to be seen with that machinery. But somebody had planned it. It was agreed. We want to help the company. All of those things would have come into play. And all of a sudden, you have a really bad photo going out there that's going to be a gift of memes for years on social media. So I don't think Fine Gael right now have enough chaos people in there that are able to spot this and say, how do we adjust? How do we change? When do you deviate from the plan? When do you say, tear up the plan and let's form a new one really quickly on the hoof? That was a poor start for them. Then, of course, Fine Gael, Law and Order Party. We've had crime in Dublin, and gangland crime has been an ongoing issue. But you know what? We don't tends to be for the rest of the country, rest of people. It's like, yeah, they're killing each other and there're shootouts and it's terrible. But you know, that's not our day-to-day life. The manner of the killing of a youngster in from Drogheda, that hurts a lot of people and makes them think this is getting out of hand. And I saw a series of tweets actually from a good friend of mine, Greg Canty, Fusion Communications there, who Greg actually put out a piece. He was listed a number of tweets and was kind of saying, what's happening to us as a society? You know, and it did strike a chord with me, because you do find yourself asking that question when a couple of these stories hit like this. And it does. You ask yourself, are we unravelling? And there will be a sense of that. And therefore, all of a sudden, where crime and law and order should not have been maybe jumped to the top of the agenda, it became really important. And then Leo is going to Garda station to see, you know, an update on the investigation. But there is going to be a sense of what happened before. Now, in touching on the homelessness, because I know some of the people are going to say, what can you do? What could Leo have done about that other than not be pictured on a forklift? Could he have addressed it? Look, bear with me here, because we want to get beyond all the rights and wrongs. I have my views morally about what we should be doing on homelessness, and other people have their views on what's possible and everything else. But leave that aside. How would you actually deal with that homelessness disaster that strikes your campaign and the tragic story of this person? What would you do? What could they have done? Well, the first thing you would say is outrage. You know, as a human level, we all should be, and I think were, and our each of us personally felt when we heard that story, outrage. Didn't get that sense from Leo Varadkar. This was where, I'm upset, this is a terrible story, whatever. Not, you know, you might have hit me over the head with a hammer here, is the level of shock you want to show and say, this can't go on. How could it happen? Now, of course, yes, I know the strategists are sitting there and saying, yeah, but then we'll be blamed for it. But that's the thing. What could you have done was to isolate what's different about this one incident that's not about. Everybody else was saying this happened because of our homelessness situation. This has happened because, and do you know what, they're dead right about that. And as I say, I can agree with that viewpoint. But from the other side, what would you have said? It's to pick the elements of this that are not happening. So Leo Varadkar needed to get a message across. So this isn't a policy of clearing homeless people. This isn't something that happens every day. There was a specific set of circumstances and he needed to find out. He needed to be outraged by it and then go on a hunt for the actual specifics that happened in this case that should not have happened and do not happen in other circumstances and say, this is unacceptable. Now, he's still going to take flak for it. Still going to take flak for the wider problem. That's absolutely true. But instead, Leo started trying to shift the blame on Dublin City Council or onto the Lord Mayor, and then came back, well, do you not feel ashamed? Then he said, we're all shamed by this homelessness. He continued with the narrative of allowing this one incident be indicative of all homelessness, and that's not good for Fine Gael. I think that was a particularly bad start. They needed to isolate the incident They were caught off guard. They couldn't. And perhaps, you know, as some will say, maybe quite rightly, then people are associating this is not where we need to be as a society. But an issue they didn't expect maybe to dominate has suddenly really hit them hard. And that's the same with crime. They're big problems. The other thing, of course, that Fine Gael had expected was a little bit maybe more regard for their work on Brexit. Now, I saw some clips that were shared where Leo Varadkar was meeting people on the street and talking and saying, you know, about Brexit and the importance of Brexit. And the people were responding to him saying, yeah, but, you know, let's talk about the health service and let's talk about how things are here. And, you know, it's back to people wanting the roads to be done and their hospital to be cleared and their services to be in place for them. Leo wanted to talk about Brexit. There seemed to be almost an element of surprise. Now, I asked people for some comments on the campaign. E.J. Kelly of the Irish Times, when I said, you know, what's some of the campaign up for you at the moment? She tweeted me, actually, and she said, it's not about Brexit. And quite simply, I think that's an early lesson. It's not about Brexit. But you know what? Again, if you'd been listening to my podcast before it, if you've been listening to several other commentators, certainly any time we've people have spoken about this, I certainly have said time and time again, it was never going to be. Never. Let's look at what history tells us of every single Taoiseach we have had. When it comes to an election, you can bring peace in Northern Ireland. You can negotiate Delors 1 like Charles Haughey did. You can go through the Downing Street Declaration, Northern Ireland, the money from Europe like Albert Reynolds did. You can get the twin track approach of John Bruton in Northern Ireland. He could have the Amsterdam Treaty coming through. You could be Bertie Ahern and the European Constitution negotiations. You could have so much that you could say was successful internationally. Enda Kenny, the same. At the end of the day, once the election, people rate you in what I call peacetime, between elections, they rate you highly. They love to see you do international stuff. When you're back down in the trenches and an election, nobody wants to hear about you swanning off to the Elysee Palace or somewhere around London doing fancy things or flying over to New York to settle a deal. No, they want to hear, are you one of us? Are you down on the ground? Do you get us? Do you get our issues? Do you get our problems? Because elections become local really, really quickly. And I do not believe or cannot understand if anybody in Fine Gael thought the public were going to go, do you know what? They handled Brexit really well. That's why I'm going to re-elect them. That doesn't happen. Your local candidate gets no thanks for that. And that's each election in Ireland is about the local candidates on the ground. So therefore, the election becomes local. We don't have a presidential style campaign. And I don't understand how they could have thought it was ever going to be about Brexit. But they seem to think that and get a bit of a shock. And then one of the things that maybe perhaps is indicative of where they were at, they had a video which somebody thought was funny. I presume probably thought up by Youth Arms, and parties are great at this. And this kind of stuff works for Youth Arms because they're expected to be different. But a video where it was a funny video of people wearing the masks of various people from Fianna Fáil and saying Fianna Fáil are running around looking for their policies and can't find them anywhere. Ha ha ha. You know, I know where they were going with it. But there's two things about it. If you want to use negative campaigning, some people say, oh, negative campaigning doesn't work and stay away from it altogether. I don't buy that because I've seen the effects of negative campaigning and I've seen it actually work. But the thing about negative campaigning is it has to be specific. Negative campaigning does not work as in, you know, you see the same thing with Sinn Féin, people going, oh, fairy tale economics. That doesn't work. That doesn't make people move away from Sinn Féin. What people might be worried about with Sinn Féin is something specific. What is fairy tale economics? Show me the point that doesn't add up, and then I'll listen. Attack Fianna Fáil on the specifics that you're getting. That will work for people. That will make people sit up and think, actually, these guys, you know, maybe are not worthy of my vote. General kind of Fianna Fáil can't find their policies. Ha ha ha. That does not work. And certainly doing it in a humorous way. You know, I said at the outset here about Leo needing this sense of just who he is and being at ease with people. one of the problems for Leo Varadkar has been that, you know, when you have the podium in front of him, he can be quite good, he can be fine. You know, he's looking up and around and he has clever use of language and he's very articulate and very smart in what he's actually trying to get across. And I think, you know, that can work well. The problem in modern politics, Barack Obama pointed to this some years ago, where he said politics has to move out from behind the podium. He said those days are gone. You no longer get a podium. You've got to walk out and talk to people. And when you pull away the podium, Leo suddenly looks like he feels naked in front of everybody. And that is a really, really big issue for them, because you can't. You've got to go out and you've got to mix with people and you've got to be able to talk to people about things. When it comes to attacking Fianna Fáil and coming into videos like this, you know, there's a perception already. Leo could leave social media completely and still have a perception that he's the best at it, because that's how people see him. They see him as fairly down with stuff, fairly clever about it, young, energetic, enthusiastic, good at branding, good at that. He has all that down. The last thing Leo needs is anybody proving, look how hip and cool we are, because he's too much hip and cool. What Leo needs is gravitas. And the last thing he needed was a funny video, because the one thing he's missing is that gravitas. Is Leo serious enough? Is this the heavy hitter in the room? The guy that kind of scares you sometimes? No. Leo is good for the joke, the laugh, the hippie thing on social media. That's Leo. Whatever Fine Gael thought, you know, this will be clever, it wasn't. Because number one, it broke the rules of negative campaigning and that it wasn't specific enough and really getting to the heart of what it was, particularly in Ireland, that's what we need. And number two, all it did was add to the continuing perception that that's what he's at and that's all Leo is about. And unfortunately, Leo is out front and centre of this campaign. He is what Fine Gael are marketing upon. That's dangerous too, because it doesn't mean that every candidate is going to get that bounce on the ground from that. And that's making each election really, really difficult in each constituency, because it is a series of elections. So after a tough opening couple of days, as I say, we're going to touch on the poll in a minute, but Fine Gael have had a poor start to this campaign. David Davenpower in a column this week talked about how, you know, this was the early missteps opening the door for Fianna Fáil here. And I think that's true. So what they've got to do is sit back now, I think, in the Fine Gael rooms and say, OK, let's just address some of these issues. Let's not ignore them, because the one thing that happens in an election is you believe your own hype. You start saying, oh, people are saying this, but it's not true. It's true. It's happening. You have time to address it. And there are some of those issues. And at the end, we'll summarise maybe how they're going to do that this week. But that needs to happen and happen really quickly for them after this weekend. So let's turn for a moment to Fine Gael's biggest opponents in this campaign, Fianna Fáil, and how they have started the campaign. Very interesting point to make. Again, I think we saw the choreography between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar. These guys aren't friends. Their parties absolutely hate each other. And I can't stress that enough, because time and time again, when I hear commentators and media talk about it, I get a sense that there's quite a few still just don't get Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil and the people that inhabit those parties. You can talk policy till you're blue in the face. You can talk about one thing and another and saying, well, there's this bit of difference, that bit of difference. Bottom line, culturally, these people hate each other. Now, we've all worked in offices where we're all on the same team. We are all aiming for the same thing. But there's somebody there you really dislike, even though you're from. You can't just say, well, you're all working for the same company, trying to get the same end, therefore you must like each other. No. Sometimes you hate each other. There are two personality types, really, in Ireland. And those personality types, certainly politically, are very different in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. And people who are in those parties are grown up, and some would say maybe brainwashed into a certain personality type as a result of it. But it makes you very different to the people in that other party. And they are natural enemies. So people go on with this thing of they need to get over themselves and just get along and do that. They're not going to happen, folks. They absolutely really dislike each other. One of the opening columns I saw this week was by Stephen Collins, who said that, you know, it'd be good for the country maybe if the Grand Coalition came back on. You know, every election nowadays, we're going to hear this. Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin, the only thing they did in the lead up to this was to continually ensure that the independents had no influence, and the independents naively allowed them to do that because the two guys sat down and said, we'll sort out the election date. And the reason they were doing that all along was because this has to be about you versus me, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. Pick your side. This is back to old style election politics. And they believe in the long term that will be good for the country, because every country has essentially, you know, again, I hear this all the time. I heard somebody at work only this week said to me, I understand American politics, but I don't follow Irish politics at all because I don't get the difference between the parties. I don't follow American politics. Therefore, I look across the Atlantic. I can't tell you what president was from what party, because they all do the damn same thing. They all start wars. They're all capitalists. They all do broadly the same thing, a little bit around taxes and a little bit around health that they're mucking around the edges with. But broadly, two big parties milling around centrist opinions with some extremes within them. And I look at the UK and people say, oh, it's left-right. It's left-right because they've got fancy names on it as to being left and right. Other than that, look at the records in government, and I'd say, yeah, you pick out the NHS, but here in Ireland, you can pick out free education, the social welfare, you can pick out numerous things that parties have done back in the days of history. But essentially, the two parties in Britain form, mostly their policies come out. I'd struggle to tell you, was that done by a Tory or a Labour government? I don't know. Too broadly centrist, because most voters are in the centre. And within parties, you will have extremes. Within Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, there are extremes. But they're aiming for the fact that most parties, and if the two of them got together, all it would do is open up for Labour or Sinn Féin to come into that centre opinion, and they'd become more centrist. And we'd still have two broadly centrist parties battling it out. The more extreme you get, the less votes you're going to get. Simple as. So you're never going to have that. So let's just put that out there, because having read Stephen Collins' column, I have to say I disagree with it completely, because why would these two parties do that, open it up for another party to come in and say, well, do you know what, you can be the other centrist party because people see us as two centrists, and it's not going to change anything. Plus the fact, culturally, these two parties hate each other so much. That government, in my view, would not last. I think they would get a struggle to make any decision. It would be full of undermining, vitriolic hatred between the two of them that would spend their time infighting, and economically and socially be a disaster for Ireland before it even collapses in a short period of time. So, given the fact that Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar did plan this, however, and independents and smaller parties, some of the ones in opposition had limited what they could do. Independent Alliance need to take some blame. They allowed themselves to be played here. They allowed themselves to be put on the margins while Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar decided the election date. That is all because they wanted to have this old-style election, and they're going to get it. They're going to get that election, in my view, a really old-style one. So, Fianna Fáil, look, they had an interesting start, because I was wondering what we were going to see from them. What was Fianna Fáil going to do when it came? This is an election they've been preparing for months, years. They've been ready for it. And I was wondering, are we going to see the PJ Mara style? You know, suddenly we have to launch, it's showtime. That would have been interesting, because it's the way Fianna Fáil traditionally have done campaigns. They're big, they've big personalities. They like a bit of razzmatazz. We didn't get it, though, at all from Fianna Fáil on this. Indeed, it was quite low-key. I'm going to say Fianna Fáil had, if I was to put a term on what it is, it's sober and somber. And I think that's a mantra I feel, perhaps unconsciously, that they're all repeating in their heads. Sober and somber, sober and somber, sober and somber. Every time we're seen, that's what we've got to put out there. Because that's what the campaign looks like. And I think strategically Fianna Fáil have decided, you know what? Fine Gael are going to be the efficient party of spin. We're going to totally try be anti-spin. So much so that we're going to put no effort into the actual styling of our campaign. we're just going to be sober and somber, waiting in the background. And I think they believe Fine Gael will actually, we're not going to fight with them for media attention. We're not going to fight with them for head-to-head activity out there, or try beat them on that and what, how good it looks or how sharp it is. We're going to concede that media ground to them because we believe Fine Gael will muck it up. I think that's what the strategists have said. They said, look, we'll have quite a dull campaign because, you know, that will attract everyone to Fine Gael's campaign, and Fine Gael will misstep. That's just what happens. That's a bit of a gamble. I'm not sure how well that'll last over a number of weeks. So I would reckon Fianna Fáil need to have something within their arsenal that they're going to use during the campaign. And let's just talk about some evidence of this. Every time that Fine Gael have come out with something, Fianna Fáil have their policy launches, they've had them, but they're a little bit understated. There's nothing exciting about what they've done. It's certainly no showtime. They even are using the same slogan as the last election. Now, you know, in one way, if I were Fine Gael, I'd be really hitting them on that and saying, look, guys, you haven't even moved on since 2016. You haven't even got a fresh idea since then. You know, to me, that's a weak approach, you know, but I think it's almost like the Fianna Fáil want to be seen as the Lidl Araldi of politics. Look, it's a good bargain here you're getting. We're not wasting money on coming up with a new slogan and a new vision of society. It'll be grand. Same one we used the last time. It's like the guy going to the wedding and, you know, his wife says, you know, oh, come on, we'll get dressed up. We're going to a wedding. And he goes, no, sure, I have a suit. I'm not buying a new suit. The suit I have from before will do grand. It's fine. It's me good suit. I use that for interviews. That's fine. That's what Fianna Fáil are here. Me soup from the last time will do. Everything from the last time. Reuse, recycle, isn't that green stuff what everyone talks about? Let's do that. We'll recycle the old stuff. It's fine. Don't put in too much effort here. Fine Gael will muck it up trying to look too fancy. They'll get the other person there will be in too fancy a suit and no one will like them, and then I'll look good. Don't worry. And that seems to be the hope, because other than that, it's actually quite a dour start from them. But I think they've got away with it. They've got away with it because of that, because Fine Gael haven't managed to actually spot that weakness early and hit them on it, that is this a party that's moving on. And Fianna Fáil, again, in the previous podcast, I talked about this, that there is a sense within Fianna Fáil, I think they just expect the old vote is just going to gradually keep coming back to them. And that they've been proven that that has happened each election, each vote since 2011. Gradually, some of their old vote keeps coming back a little bit more. I think they're expecting the same here. Without putting too much risk into this, we're just going to get over. And, you know, I think for the early stages, it's a plan that's worked, but it is one that's going to carry inherent risks. And I think they're going to need to change as they go. There needs to be an evolution in that campaign into something else. Now, maybe it's because they do expect Fine Gael to start changing it as the election goes up. Maybe it's at the reverse of 2007 when Fianna Fáil came back in the last week. This time Fianna Fáil are maybe afraid Fine Gael will come back in the last week and maybe are keeping something back for that. I also think Fianna Fáil probably are saying, let's hold back for the TV debates because we reckon Micheál could beat Leo in those. And that'll really shock and surprise people if he does. And therefore, that's where we're going to enter with a little bit of razzmatazz at that stage. But they're going to have to be ready for that, because sometimes, at the moment, if it wasn't for the fact that the missteps on the government side are commanding the media attention, if I was looking at Fianna Fáil right now, you know, I do look at some of those clips. You know, the clips, every party has to have them. You know, one of the rules when you're on the campaign trail, never be alone. Never, ever be alone. It's just really bad luck. You have to have people around you. Now, of course, you know when you see that group of people, there's the various heads in the background. There's usually somebody doing the looking off into the distance and as if they're quite busy in the background, looking down, telling somebody else to be quiet or check something. There's a few people looking down at their feet, kind of shuffling about as if they're pondering deeply what the party leader's saying. And there's usually somebody at the party leader's chin nodding furiously with every word that the party leader says. You know, they're just funny, I think, for the rest of us to watch. But they're an important part of the campaign. But you know what? Fianna Fáil, I think I always get the sense when I see them there that deep down behind the eyes, there's a little bit of sense of they're all there going sober and somber, sober and somber, sober and somber. And they're all waiting to say, you know, it's grand, get this done. Micheál will be gone and the crack will begin then, lads. Come on, it's fine. Just keep it together. Let's look like we're really responsible here. Don't want anybody thinking, oh, Fianna Fáil, you know, they're a bit wild, the old party days, the Celtic Tiger days, all that. Sober and somber, sober and somber. Keep it up. Keep it up. That's just the way we go. Let's not go too wild now. Don't want anything like that happening. At least not when the leader's around. Because then once that's gone, sure, look, we're back. We'll have the crack. It's grand. That's the personality of the party. I think it's very often what people have liked or attracted them to the party. But they're certainly keeping a lid on it right now. And I think sober and somber is something we're going to see a lot more of still for a couple of weeks. But at some point, they're going to need to break out of that. They are going to need to come up with some kind of policy that says Fianna Fáil does have a vision here. Because, you know, a part of the reason people are feeling tired with Fine Gael and the government is because while there's been policies, there isn't really a sense of, well, I don't know where we're going, what it is, or a view of how we're going to bring all our policies together. There is a danger they're going to get a sense Fianna Fáil are more of the same. And that is, as an election goes on, it can get really, really tiresome. They're going to need something. Now, I'm sure strategists are maybe sitting there laughing, listening to this thing. Well, of course we've something. We've that planned for ages. And if they have, we'll see it in the coming weeks. But right now, that is a very sure-footed, safe start to a campaign. How it moves along in the couple of weeks is what you've really got to watch, because as other parties are going to adjust and they're going to say, okay, we've got to come up with something that's going to actually take them. And some of the smaller parties may actually start doing this, and that could actually really damage Fianna Fáil, where they're expecting discontent with Fine Gael to just land back with them. If one of the smaller parties manages to kind of say, actually, discontent could land with us because we've got a solution, that could really, really damage. And you could see a late surge for a smaller party, or you could see Fine Gael managing to pull some of that back by saying, look, it's okay, we are in control, and you don't want to take the risk with these guys. So sober and somber, that's where Fianna Fáil are at. Watch them, watch how they say it, look at how they're presenting themselves. That's where their opening of their campaign certainly has been. Now, what of some of the other parties? Well, it's been tough. It's been tough for the other smaller parties because they're not getting the kind of attention. But one that did a little bit was Sinn Féin. This is a huge test for Sinn Féin. After disappointing local elections, they're then coming back into a by-election that gave them a little bit of hope. Just what's happening now, I think you're watching Sinn Féin being judged, publicly judged. How well they're going to do on that is going to be just, I think, internally in the party. They've got to hold it together for a couple of weeks. They've got to hold it together and not allow themselves to get distracted into leadership debates or anything during this election, because this is a hold what you have election, I think, here. Try maybe get a couple of seats more. Probably not going to get the big gains as things stand, but there's hope for them there, always, but that's where they've got to look at, not get into real deep division too quickly. It's been difficult as a starting point because I think when Gerry Adams was leader of Sinn Féin, there was this idea that he wasn't able to really compete on the economics or get a sense of where people were at in the Republic on those economic issues. And that's fair. I don't think it was a strong point. There was a romanticism about Gerry Adams. He was a man who had come from that conflict politics and had a reputation for how he solved those things. That didn't suit, you know, economic politics. They looked to Mary Lou MacDonald because she was, again, strong media personality, good performer, good speaker, and somebody who was well briefed on Southern issues, who knew what the issues were for people in the Republic, at a better level perhaps than Gerry did. Early start to this campaign wouldn't instill confidence in me, I have to say. I don't think I would like to have seen Mary Lou pick a particular economic issue and say, right, you know, we're going to get all the usual stuff, fairy tale economics, Sinn Féin can't do this, Sinn Féin can't do that, oh, they want to spend money, don't want to offend anybody. That's all true, yes. You know, that is true insofar as they are going to be accused of that always. It's just a handy excuse. Some times Sinn Féin are going to feel, well, how do we get around that? You know what? Pick an issue. Pick an issue and give us one really, really credible solution here that none of the other parties have. A really strong solution. Not an extreme solution. Not something, but something that could have come from Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil. Broadly strong, centrist, reasonable policy, but you've got the money put in place for it. You're taking it from one place, you're putting it to another. And then come out and say, look, there you go, because I'm going to demonstrate to you my command of this economic issue really clearly, straight up. I understand business, I understand the communities, I understand people. Pick it, pick your issue, figure out how you're going to do it, and allow yourself the time and space to then show your command of that topic. That would set the tone very quickly for everybody saying, no, Mary Lou is a different person to Gerry Adams. She's got a really strong knowledge here. Yes, be tested on other issues, but let's get one that really surprises people. Instead, Sinn Féin have started off in the same way they've started previous elections. It's a bit too general. It's a bit too broad. It's a bit too, you know, let's attack all the other parties and let's just talk about how they're rubbish for the country, but, you know, we're something different. It's that the whole debate is just tired. It's been around over a decade now of people saying that. And people just wonder, what are you going to do? Give us a sense of what you will actually do in there for me. I would have liked to see that from the Sinn Féin, to just get ahead of that. They haven't done it. And then they had Paddy Holohan, an MMA fighter, you know, running for election and coming out with comments that just go against everything Sinn Féin has tried to build up in terms of image about itself. They took really good action, I think, very quickly, said they're taking disciplinary action, we're moving on this, we're not allowing it grow, good, strong. But you know what? In the middle of a campaign, if your high point is the fact that you're taking decisive action against your own people, that's got to be just a head melt for the strategists. And I think if they're sitting in the room right now, Sinn Féin has got to say, right, couple of rules. We stick together, we organise this well, and we find where we're going to make our stand. We've got to come up with a specific one-item policy that allows us really take a debate to Micheál and Leo and gets us a wedge into that dual leadership role they have there. Plus the fact that while Leo and Micheál have both ruled out Sinn Féin need to come across here as reasonable. They need to be saying, sure, why? We're perfect. Rather than facilitating the idea that Sinn Féin cannot be in government because the two parties reject them, Sinn Féin should be showing why we are ready for government. Why there's nothing wrong with our policies. There's something there that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael couldn't agree on. You know what, guys? Let's point out the areas where Sinn Féin actually does agree with some of their policies, because that's how you prove we're actually ready for government here. And you guys are only making stuff up as to why you can't go in with us. But we could perfectly, if you keep saying, yes, well, we hate them too, all you're doing is facilitating the idea that, yeah, they're never going to be. So no point voting there because they're not going to be in government. And you don't want that in this election. This election is all about who is in government. So a little bit of work to do for Sinn Féin. But over this week, I think we're going to see them trying to get ahead and not be ground down on internal issues within the party. So that's where we've been at for an opening week of the campaign, or a little less than a week there. One of the great things we got, of course, was straight off, we are into opinion polls. And we love opinion polls. We love opinion polls because they give us a sense of what's going on and what's happening, and a snapshot in time, as they say. Controversial one to lead it all off. Sunday Times Behaviour and Attitudes poll. First thing to say on this, normally these polls are revealed about 9 p.m. on the RTE News. They're shared with RTE and they talk about what's in the poll, the headline figures. Sunday Times changed that. They waited till midnight to release it via their app. I get it. They want everybody to be signing up to the app. How many of us did, I don't know. I think we're willing to wait a little bit of time and just get it. I think it involved a lot of people staying up late in order to do it. I'm not quite sure how successful it will be, because I think it actually got a lot of people, a lot of us political nerds, who are probably the only ones really interested and desperate to hear it, quite upset, particularly when you say it's coming out at midnight and it doesn't come out till 5 past midnight. 5 minutes is a long time in a political nerd's life when they are waiting desperately for information on a poll. So please, Sunday Times, can we be a little bit more humane to the nerds? I know you have a business model, but let's just get more information out there and give us the headlines quickly. Everyone's going to share them fairly solidly anyway. And please, if you are going to give us a deadline, do not miss it, even by 30 seconds. But they did give us a good poll, an interesting poll. It started off with the fact that Fine Gael has dropped by 7 points to 20%, according to the poll. A large part of this might be due, during the polling dates, to the whole commemoration of the RIC, which was a disaster for Fine Gael. You know, absolute lunacy to have even gotten in on that debate, which was entirely unnecessary for them. Probably they didn't expect an election coming quite as quickly as it did. But look, grow up, lads. You knew something was going to happen here. Tread carefully and actually ask a few people outside of the bubble how we approach some of these things, and you might get a little bit more sense from them. It was a really bad period for Fine Gael, and I think it affected how people saw them. It certainly is showing in that poll. That's a big drop. Is it realistic that that's where it's at? I think so. I think Fine Gael have generally got quite soft support, as do all other parties. I think we're still in a transient stage of politics. The good news is I think they can make that back pretty quickly. Some Fine Gaelers were on to me straight away last night saying it's an outlier. You know, it's not what we're hearing on the doorsteps. I think it's real. I think it's there, but I think it's soft. And I think within a week it'll come back and they'll say, well, that proves it was an outlier. No, it proves that you made that back in the following week. And I think you can. But I do think it was a tough start to the campaign, and the timing of the election wasn't great. I think Leo had much better times to go at the end of last year than where he ended up going. But anyway, that's where Fine Gael has. That's a tough. I think Fine Gael expected they were a little bit maybe behind. Government expects that. Maybe a little bit of a flack and then we make it up. I think the worry for the strategist is, if this is true, we didn't expect to be that far behind. We didn't expect that to be the case. That's going to be the real challenge. Great news for Fianna Fáil. Up 5 points to 32. Again, the warning there, I'd say, is that that's probably a soft rise and could be lost just as easily as it was gained. But it will bear Fianna Fáil out in their idea that, you know, we just keep things, you know, sober and somber. That's what we need to have here, and the vote will gradually make its way back. We'll see. As I say, I think it's really, really soft. The other things on the polls it showed was Labour down 2 to 4% just shows that fluctuation within the margin of error, that same fluctuation is ongoing for Labour. They just don't seem to be able to get any attention beyond that. But I would say that differs within constituencies. And for Labour, constituencies is where it's at. Hold what they have, get a few extra seats. That's where they've got to be aiming at this stage. Some of the other things that were there, the Green Party was up 1 to 7%. You know, I think the Greens might have hoped for a little bit better than just up 1 in a poll. 7% would be a good return, but I think they're capable of much more in the current environment. So I think they've gone field, they've a bit of work to do. Sinn Féin support down 1 to 19%. I think Sinn Féin will actually be really happy with that. I think that shows Sinn Féin, they will probably, I think a lot of the main parties expected Fine Gael probably somewhere around 25, Fianna Fáil somewhere around 27, and probably would have predicted Sinn Féin somewhere around 14, 15, which is traditionally where they always end up coming in, and polls sometimes do over-predict Sinn Féin being up at 19, 20, and they always tend to come in at that 15, 16. Sinn Féin, I think, would be happy at 19%, very happy. And given that they didn't command the attention of the electorate early on, I think if they're still at 19%, they'd say that's a good day for us. So not too much displeasure from them. Where it's going to go from there, independents haven't really, again, not much change fluctuation. The thing about these polls, people say, did it matter? Because, of course, they can change. Even if it is true, it could change within a week or a couple of days. And yes, it could. They do set a narrative, though. That narrative now is Fine Gael on a back foot, and Fine Gael need to change that narrative. It just feeds into, you've had a bad start to the campaign, now you've had a bad poll. This is all going horribly wrong for Fine Gael. How do you address that? How do you get back? Because they need to right now. They need to change that completely and get back in a narrative of, look, we're now on the fight back. And that's where the narrative has to come in. They want to go back and say, we're going to do what Fianna Fáil did in 2007. We're waiting and we're going to hit them hard, and then we're going to change all of this back and people are going to come back to us. They do need that, and they'll need an opinion poll that shows them coming up even slightly from there. The good news for Fine Gael is getting a poll that bad this early suggests that you probably will get another one that'll show you at least doing, even if it showed you 23-24%, now you'd go, see, we're on the way back. So they have that narrative. It's going to be hard for Fianna Fáil to hold up from 32% and go up anywhere from there. It's likely other polls will show them down from there in the election. But it's a tough start in terms of getting polls that good or bad early. But there's lots of time to change the narrative on figures. So a really interesting one for us, but one that I think we're all going to wait and just see how this week pans out before we jump into any big decisions on foot of those figures. Now, it's been a really strange start for the rest of the field. Labour, you know what, guys? I'm not going to say a whole lot about Labour, and the reason being that says it all. This wasn't a great start to a campaign. They've struggled to get any kind of attention. I think they've kind of Alan Kelly on a leash somewhere. And maybe they just need to let him loose. Because he'll certainly get you attention. Yes, it's a risk, but he'll certainly get you attention, and they need attention. I think Brendan Howland has tried to, you know, hold this together. But there is a sense within Labour that there's a great exhale of, do you know what, we're just glad the election's happening. We just need to win a couple of seats and get a few people back in. Then we can have another leadership contest and we can start the real regrowth of Labour at that point. That's possibly what they're thinking of. They are going to have to consider that there's a strong likelihood they'll actually be in government. Regrowing your party is always hard within government. But I think they just need to get a sense of, I think they're being tempted into more and more radical ideas when they just need to be able to say, right, Labour can actually do stuff. Maybe the radical centre is where they're at. That's slightly left. We're radical, but we're not mad. We're not going crazy with our policies here. But let's show you how we can work and how we will work in government. I think it's good that they did come out with their red lines and said, if we don't have this, then we don't have that. If the parties, these are things you have to agree with us on. One piece of advice I'd give them is they need to pick a couple of things that both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have, and Brendan Howland needs to look at their manifestos and go, well, and okay, some people would say we shouldn't do this because it's, you know, preparing ahead of government negotiations. But if I were Brendan Howland looking to get extra seats now and get ahead of this and get some attention for Labour, I'd be looking at Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil policies as the two big parties and picking out items that Labour will veto in future government and saying, see, that will not happen if they want coalition. So when Leo promises you that, or Micheál promises you that, you're not getting it if they're going to government with us, or we are going to ensure that that never happens because we think that's a bad policy. That will force a debate onto Leo and Micheál about how you're going to do some of these things, because some of them you can't do if Labour are there. You can't privatise this or whatever it is. But you need to find those things and actually put a red line on their policies and say that there, ask the other leaders about that, because we are not having it and that will not happen in any negotiation. It's one way of getting into the debate. Other than that, I think Labour are doing what Labour can do, which is to stick on the ground and win seats on the ground. They need people like Gay Donald Reardon back in. I know, be accused of family bias there, but I do think they need those kind of young, relatively young, not that young anymore, but relatively young voices. They need a revival in Dublin in particular. I think it'll be tough outside in some of the rest of the country, but in Dublin, I think they need to get on the ground in the constituencies fighting those elections. So maybe it's not about really great media attention. It's about how well they can do that on the ground. That's probably where they're focused and probably where they need to be focused. They need a lot of canvassers. They need a lot of support on the ground. And that's where they can drive real change. Going across some of the other parties there, you know, look, independents, I think the opportunity for independence really depended on the Independent Alliance, who should have brought down the government, to be quite honest, if they wanted to save independence. They didn't. Therefore, you know, independence do look a lot like also-rans. The fact that there are some interesting independents running, I noticed this week we had news that Marion Harkham was going to run in Sligo Leitrim. I think she's going to be an incredible candidate up there. Again, know Marion well. I think she's going to really put the cat among the pigeons up there in terms of running. You're going to see a lot of independents like that, specific ones doing incredibly well in specific areas. Overall, I think the trend towards independence is going to be probably not anything like it was in 2016, because they're just getting pushed out. There just isn't anything there that they've dominated the debate or can show the benefits of being an independent. And maybe that was something that could have happened with the Independent Alliance, didn't. So I think some of those candidates will suffer for that. But then there are others, Baxter Moore and Dennis Nocton, usual kind of candidates who have good, strong local machines, are probably going to still do very well. They're not worried about how independents are rated nationally. But I don't see a swing. So I think unknown independents going to struggle. We're going to see a real difficulty in some of them getting seats or coming from nowhere to get a seat. The Greens, this has been a really surprising one for me. I'm not quite convinced their campaign launch looked well. Somebody, I'm going to go through some of the tweets we got, but I know it was mentioned that they thought the Green campaign looked like a funeral. It might be a bit harsh, but I think individually some of the candidates have had great launches and great openings to it. Overall, a little bit disappointing. I'm a little bit disappointed. This has to be a green election. It's one of the big issues that is out there, and people are talking about it all the time. But are they actually getting a sense of what needs to happen? And I think, of course, the danger is Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, bigger parties, Sinn Féin, all are going to talk about environmental issues. They're going to steal the Greens' clothes, as people always say. I think the Greens are going to be here for gains. Let's take that as given. Can they really get those sizable gains and make it as much as should be possible within this election? I'm not sure on current standards, because I think Eamon Ryan needs to adjust. In the opening days of the campaign, I think we've seen the usual thing of trying to tell everybody what it will be like in 2050 or 2060. And you know what? That's fine. It's a good idea. I like it when we're talking about the vision of society. But in an election, people want to know what you're going to do in the next 2, 3, 4 years. That's what they're asking. What's going to happen when you go in now? Your first 100 days, what do you change? What do you get? Don't give me the vision of... Because when you start talking about the society of 2050 or 2030 even, people get scared because they think, I'm not ready for that change. You're going to take my car away. You're going to take my oil away. You're going to take my food away, my livelihood, how I farm, all of those things. That's where it's getting difficult for the Greens. Even before this election, that's where it began to get difficult for Eamon Ryan trying to articulate how rural Ireland could have carpooling. And as he said, it's been taken out of context. But you know, why were you talking about that? Because the truth is, coming up to an election and getting ready for an election, in the next 2, 3 years of government, you are not going to create that change. It might be something you gradually start, but you're not going to create that change. I would think, or expected from the Greens in this election, that they were going to come out with... Do you remember in 2011, we had the 5-point plan from Fine Gael? Could be source of some fun and everything at the time. However, I thought the Greens were going to come out with and say, right, you know what? If we're elected, the Greens are in, let's get practical and pragmatic about what can actually be done in Ireland. If we go in here, we're going in to protect the environment. And that's going to start with doing, let's say, 4 things. 4 real key policies that we can change immediately. And some of them are going to require spending and funding. Yes, some of them might require some charges, whatever. We're going to be upfront about all that. But we're going to do 4 things really critical. I think for young voters who generally are kind of, okay, I might be willing to pay a little bit more, whatever, if you're protecting the environment. But we're going to do 4 things that will change your life in the next couple of years. What kind of things are those? Well, You know, look, you could start out by saying, look, here's the amount of homes in Ireland, and we are going to find the funding to increase either supports or encourage people in, or to have a finance scheme that is easy accessible. And we are going to ensure that all of your homes in the next 5 years, this is going to upscale completely the whole home insulation, retro solar PV thing, whatever it is. We're going to change all of that in this 5 years. We're going to put in place a huge program on Irish homes in the next couple of years. And it's going to cost us money, and maybe we'll come up with a plan. I thought they'd be working on this, a European Central Bank and all that stuff. We'll come up with something that they could throw out as a policy that make us all say, actually, we'd like that in our homes. If that scheme is there, but we'd like to have a warmer, nicer, more comfortable home. Aside from the environment, we can do this. Just make it accessible to us, yes. And then the Greens could say, in a couple of years, that will have wiped out X amount of CO2. That will have created this. It will have created a saving. We'll avoid fines, we'll whatever. That would be one. Second point could be along with, you know, okay, right, let's not get into trying to make people be vegans and everything. Like, it's just too big a deal for Irish people to consider right now. But let's talk about how we offset some stuff. Yes, with trees. Now, they're going on about, you know, how they're repurposing the state or services and all that. I don't get why we need to do that. Just let's get on with tree planting. Let's come up and say, right, we're going to have a tree planting exercise. There will be X million trees planted by every home and person and whatever in the country. We can get there. We can do that. Again, it's going to save X amount of carbon in the years ahead. Maybe it's EVs. Maybe it is public transport in Dublin. But when you're talking about those things, let's not try, say, in Dublin, everybody has to get out of their car and that's the end of it. Try say what's feasible in 2 or 3 years. What could you actually have in place in Dublin in terms of public transport? What are a couple of things you would spend money on? Undoubtedly, yes, maybe have to borrow for some of it, do it. But what difference could it make to people's lives? I expected them to have those couple of things, not be trying to tell us how we change the world by 2050. It just scares people because we're not ready for a lot of those changes. We're not ready. And I am a big believer in how we've got to change the environment, that it is going to cost us. I try and make changes myself, but I am absolutely convinced in an election, you need to tell people just a couple of years in advance, practical, pragmatic ways to change everything. And if people could grasp that, they'd say, hold on, yeah, save the environment and you're actually going to do something about it now, not build us a 10-year plan. You're actually going to say, year one will do this, year two will do that. Here are simple things that we're going to spend money on or we're going to introduce that are going to change a lot of people's lives. I think I would like to see them focus on that. Eamon Ryan, for me, has not brought a focus on those issues, and that's really, really problematic for the Greens, because until they do that, they do risk their clothes being stolen, because they're not looking like the experts on the subject. They're beginning to be able to be portrayed. You're seeing Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil back to where they were in 2002, talking about that they're a bit mad, you know, be careful. That could be new damage. Although the Greens probably are looking at their biggest gains being in urban areas like Dublin. But I think they will find pushback there in the coming weeks unless they've got something really solid to offer that people can say, yeah, that's not wild, that's actually quite practical, and we can do that in a couple of years. Now, I want to touch on some of the things that have been said in some of the papers. Really interesting piece from Jodie Corcoran, who has a piece in the paper today saying Fine Gael needs to take Varadkar off the campaign trail. Micheál Martin is relaxed with people, unlike his opposite number, writes Jodie Corcoran. I think there is that tends to tie into what we were saying. I think everybody's picking it up. But Jodie Corcoran suggests that Fine Gael strategists, this quote, Fine Gael strategists should have Simon Coveney lead the campaign in the southern half of the country and Pascal Donoghue in the northern half. Varadkar needs to be returned to base to host morning and evening press conferences. It's a winter campaign. There is no need for him to be out there when he is not being effective. He would be more useful on TV and social media. It's doubtful they are even thinking about this at Fine Gael headquarters this weekend, but they will be by the end of the week. Unquote from Jodie Corcoran, but I think that does point to a really big problem. I mean, do you take him off the campaign trail? Do you do that? Because once you do, that's going to be really noticeable. People are going to know this guy is just not on the campaign trail. So the question the strategist would have to ask with that theory, and there's some sense to it, is he actually that bad? Do we actually think there's no hope of this guy actually improving on the campaign trail? Can we not get somebody in to help him relax, help him, give him some guidance, be a little better at the branding or PR of him? If we take that decision and say it's actually a lost cause, he can't do it, then yes. But that's a major decision. And it will look and will be pointed out time and time again that he's not doing it. So it's a bit like deciding not to show up in the debate. Is it a good or bad thing? Well, if you're actually going to do worse in the debate, then maybe it's a good thing. I think it's a real struggle. I think Jody does hit on a real important point. He goes on in the article to talk about what we said at the outset of the programme. He says, quote again, Varadkar's reaction to the appalling incident involving a homeless man in a tent was a case in point. The problem is the Fine Gael leader is political to his fingertips. In a campaign, such naked politics is counterproductive. Varadkar needs to show a bit of humanity, or fake sincerity, as they say. It may be he can turn it around this week, but it is far from certain. I think Jody really does capture some of what is going to be at the forefront of the minds of so many of the politicians within Fine Gael and some of their strategists as well. Now, other interesting comment here is an article from Mary O'Rourke, who, you know, look, I have huge time for Mary O'Rourke on a personal level. Go back a long way, both in arguments and in politics. But Mary actually points to a number of things where she has an interesting article talk about the incumbency effect. And she talks about how that some of the things that affect in the election and some of the unknowns. And she says in the article, I wrote a few weeks ago in this newspaper on the attractions of an incumbent, and it will be interesting to see if this has any reflection on the election outcome. On the Fine Gael front, there are 10 constituencies where the incumbent will not be running again. And she lists all of these off, a number of them right across the country, and she says this adds up to 10 incumbents whose names will not be going forward. I've no doubt whatsoever that Fine Gael has already nominated and put forward very worthy successors, but it remains to be seen if the incumbency factor will have a bearing on the election result. In contrast, Fianna Fáil is running all of its sitting TDs. So again, she points to something there that I think is really important, is incumbency. It's tended to be seen, for us political nerds, as a real advantage. Is that going to run against Fine Gael here? And it's also going to be difficult for other parties who are trying and don't have incumbents. But she does point that one of the great unknowns in this, she says, is the Green Party and how well they're going to do. She says, again, I'm going to quote from this, we know already from the result of the Fine Gael by-election, where the Green candidate Joe O'Brien won, that they have the ability to produce very successful candidates who become winners. So now the Green Party has 3 outgoing candidates. They have behind them a fine record in European elections and also in the local elections, where in many areas quite unknown Green candidates put forward credible campaigns and were successful in gaining seats. In my opinion, the Green factor will prove to be an unsettling one in many constituencies. The vote they garner will certainly affect the Fine Gael vote in urban areas, and to a lesser extent, the Fianna Fáil vote also. That, again, that's from Mary O'Rourke, who has seen a lot of elections, and therefore I do trust her opinion on that. And I think that is one of the big unknowns. Will the Greens actually manage to do? Because if they do, they will damage Fine Gael, particularly in Dublin. They will hit Fianna Fáil in certain places too. As they grow, as they manage to get some experience on the campaign trail, and as they manage to get some attention on issues, they could really buck the trend. I think that's definitely one for all of us nerds to watch in the coming weeks. And just one other piece that I wanted to look at very quickly was a piece by Pat Leahy in the Irish Times, where he says, and I think it's again really important that parties take heed of these kind of things. He said, too many promises risks making voters nervous. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil so far running versions of their 2016 election campaigns. I think Pat does hit on this really central point that parties are still going back to 2016. They're trying to rerun what we did there. slight variation of it. Fine Gael, he says, I'll read from it again here. He said, Fine Gael's central message so far has been about the economy. The party is not unaware of voter concern about public services and housing and understands the evident belief among many voters that the government, whatever its makeup, needs to do more to tackle housing shortages and emergency department chaos. But its strategy in the early phase has been to emphasise its economic record and contrast that with its rivals' last experience in government. Necessary, I think, but not sufficient. I think Pat captures it perfectly for me, because what is Fine Gael are trying to do here is say, look, we know there's loads of problems out there, but generally we've done a fairly good job fixing things up. Remember what it was like in 2011. And I would love to shake some Fine Gael people and say, guys, you've got to get beyond 2011. You've got to get beyond this whole thing that Fianna Fáil ruined the economy. Because you know what? People have moved on. And you're still trying to tell them, look, we're better than they were in 2011. Remember 2010, 2011. As if that has been a gift to, after which everybody should just vote for Fine Gael anyway from now on. That's not going to happen. They are going to go back to Fianna Fáil. They are going to go back. They're going to say, well, you know what? I think you guys could do the same. Because I don't see any difference in the lead up to what happened there and the lead up to what you're doing now. So I'm not seeing a big difference. Maybe I'm safer going back to my party that was maybe my natural home before 2010 or 2011. That's what's happening. Fine Gael need to get beyond expecting to be thanked for the economy and deal with it, because you're just not in government. It hasn't happened for any government to be particularly thanked for all this stuff. Pat goes on to talk about the clumsy slogan they've got, and he talks about how maybe Fine Gael will look to reenact what happened in 2007 and for Fianna Fáil in that case, and come back in the last week of the campaign. But he says, across town, Fianna Fáil is alive to the danger, but it has its eye on the lessons of the last election, when Micheál Martin's championing of public services led to a doubling of the party seats and re-established its place at the centre of Irish politics. Fianna Fáil's campaign isn't just similar to 2016, it's actually using the same slogan. Noises from the campaign trail suggest it is happy enough with progress so far, but like Fine Gael, it will need more than that if it's going to win. I agree with them. I think they do need more than that. But there is a sense of, you know, let's just keep repeating the same old arguments that we fought through 2016. I think there could be a big winner here for someone who manages to move the debate on and changes things from what people seem to think is, you know, they're the issues that people are concerned about, and compare that with the things that people actually have demonstrated that they care about. I'm not sure any of the parties so far have got it, but I'm sure the strategists are definitely looking at it right now. Now, I did ask some of you on Twitter to give me your thoughts on the election, and some interesting things came back from that I'd just like to touch on. As I said earlier in the show, Ido O'Kelly said to me, it's not about Brexit, and Ido, I definitely agree with that. Brexit's not going to be the big issue of this campaign. We're not the UK. It's not central to everything we're doing here, our everyday lives of people, and I think that has been the first big misstep of it. Joan Cook, Joan said to me, events, dear boy, events, and so true. I think in the early stage of a campaign, that's what we're seeing time and time again, events and how they overtake things. It was Paddy Cullivan who also said to me, it's the housing election. I wonder, I really do, because I think there is lots of evidence for that at the beginning of this, because I think the idea that what happened with the homeless man on the canal and that tragic incident really brought people's minds into focus on this issue. I think there is an opportunity to make this a housing election. I think now it could become an issue because of that incident to it. But there's going to need to be work in order for that to happen, because as things stand, there's still the propensity for issues like that to get pushed down out of personal concern. Not everybody is stuck looking for a house, and not everybody even has somebody they know who's stuck looking for a house. Among voters, that is. That's not putting down this issue, but I think that's the danger for it. So those who really want this to remain an issue have to keep making it personal, have to keep those stories coming out at the top of the news agenda that show why this is a problem or why this is a tragedy for so many people. And then perhaps it does activate that guilt gland in the wider audience. I think Paddy could be right. It could be the housing election. It could be. I think we'll know in another week or so whether or not that issue is actually going to get legs, as we say, and manage to, well, I suppose manage to dominate the agenda, perhaps as a big social issue like that should. So we'll keep an eye on that one. I also had a comment from Upstreppers G. She said, yet another election where the people don't want the status quo in Leinster House, but will still vote for the local guy despite his party because he plays the parish pump game so well, so nothing changes. I could have a whole show on that alone. I think we're quick to dismiss the positives of having a locally based system. I think there are real positives to it, but I utterly get the point. We do tend to focus on local stuff, not national. We are forced maybe to too much local stuff. A large part of that for me is a much wider system. I had this debate elsewhere on Twitter. Don't want to get into it too much now, but for me, we do have to reform the power of local government to deal with local issues, and that would have freed up the national government to focus on something else. But right now, the power resides with those who can do a little bit more in politics. And I think that is so important. I do think that we'd like to change things a little bit. I do think we would like to move things around, and maybe there's time to reform those things in future. Now, some of the other comments that came in, Jackie Clark said, I think a hung doll as FFFG, so much the same, leaving people with little choice. Young people will vote Green, Labour will make gains, no clear winner, Sinn Féin to falter, Mary Lou to go after the election. Quite a few predictions in there, Jackie. Again, the whole thing of the little choice. Yeah, I get it. But you know what? I hear that everywhere I've gone in the world, and every political person I've talked to tends to say the same about their own home system. There's no choice really between the two big parties. That's politics. That's democracy, because so many people actually reside in the centre. They don't want to be forced into radical moves on their politics. But anyway, I do think young people will vote Green. I think you're absolutely right there. I think Labour will make some gains. I think it's hard to predict that, because it all depends on the strength of the Labour machine on the ground, because they are fighting a ground campaign. There probably won't be a clear winner, even aside from today's poll. Sinn Féin faltering, Mary Lou to go after the election. I think her position is under threat, certainly, particularly because there's a ready-made leader in Piers Doherty there. So that's one to keep an eye on, for sure. Richard Collum, who, of course, is a good friend of mine on Twitter and a brilliant political strategist in his own right, from the Fine Gael School, he said, Twitter is not reflective of real life. Well, I think we can sing that. Twitter doesn't tend to be. It gives us some snapshots, gives us something to talk about. It is definitely not reflective of what anything you would hear on doorsteps. I think you could certainly sing that one. Demo Dublin said to me, snooze fest feels almost pointless. Yeah, it does at the moment. It's going to take it a long time, I think, to kick off. It feels like they missed the time when maybe the election should have been had. It's like we just had to do this, so we're doing it. And I think that's absolutely the case. Claire said to me, I will definitely not vote for FG. I'll keep my preferences private, as someone is bound to want to row about it. Claire, definitely that happens on Twitter all the time. Say something and someone's going to row with you. That's just the idea. Mary Jane, who of course is Glamity Jane on Twitter, and brilliant on all those beauty tips that I follow all the time. She has said to me, I've never been more disillusioned. I don't think you're alone on that, Mary Jane. I think a lot of people really struggling to find what it is in politics they can react to, or what party is actually going to represent them. Jean Kelly said to me Westmeath will rule over Longford most benevolently. Yeah, I'm sure they will. We're fighting for Longford to have a seat here, whoever party it's from. It's going to be hard against those Westmeath numbers, but it can happen. Marion Harkin did say to me on Twitter that on the poll that I don't believe the gap is this wide, but also don't believe that whatever the gap is, it can't it can be easily bridged. It's early days, but a sense of disenchantment out there, and hard to change that in the next 20 days. Yeah, Marion, I can see where you're coming from. I think a lot of people are struggling to believe the gap is maybe quite that large. That might be it's at its most maximum that we're probably going to see it in a poll, I would guess. And as you say, you don't believe that whatever the gap is, it can be easily bridged. Yeah, I think we'll get a sense of that in the coming days. I still think politics at the moment is still so fluid, if you get it right. But you have to change tactics, and you have to adapt, and then perhaps you bridge a gap. We'll see. Hugh Gillander said, tend to agree on the next 20 days. Focus will sharpen the electorate's view on the next government. Expect kickback from FG on this point. I do expect that. I do expect that Fine Gael will kick back at some point in this, and they will push back on those poll numbers. Liam 7988 said to me, need to drop the green stuff. Nobody understands it. Campaign should be about building apartments in Dublin, sorting out the health service and protecting the beef farmers, nothing else. I'm going to say, Liam, I agree with some of that and disagree with others of it. I think the green stuff is important. I just think it has to be got right and it has to be practical and pragmatic. But I agree, perhaps maybe people struggle to understand some of it when it's too long term. Building apartments in Dublin, you're going to get into a debate no matter what you say you're going to build. There's going to be a problem, but maybe it needs to be about some kind of building. Definitely sorting out the health service. Do people believe promises on that? I don't know. There's been so many of them. Protecting the beef farmers. Oh, look, don't start me on the beef farmers. You know, look, I'm from a rural area. I have huge sympathy for the beef farmers. I also know they're a credibly divided group. Some farmers around me support them. Some farmers prefer to stay in the existing organisations of the IFA and want to play with different rules. All I know is I was fairly sanguine on the whole thing. I think everybody's entitled to their livelihood, and I think everyone's entitled to fight for their livelihood. Found the protest in Dublin this week, when politicians in the Dáil wasn't even sitting, utterly counterproductive. We all spent hours in our cars trying to get home, trying to get around the city. We're the people who buy the beef. To be honest with you, I'm not buying beef this weekend, and I always buy my beef at the weekend. That's my treat. And not this weekend, guys. You really, really annoyed me with it. It was pointless. Pointless. You actually are not rising. Go and attack the plants, fair enough, if that's where you're at. You've got a strike, withhold services, all those kind of things. Really, commuters in Dublin, they're not the ones that are forcing your beef price down. But anyway, look, let's get into that some other time. I know I'm probably offending all my own neighbours right now saying that, but oh, frustration. Michael Collins on the poll said it's like bringing John Delaney back to run the FAI. That's an allusion to Fianna Fáil's success in the poll. Yeah, I can see where you're coming from, Michael. I presume you certainly have a view of a party. I don't know. Yeah, people do have perhaps short memories, but maybe they're thinking things have moved on. Maybe they think the people in aren't going to be much different. Hard to see from one side and another. Marie Farrell says, my main thoughts on it are that whatever the outcome, fewer people are likely to die as a result of it than the recent one in the UK. Feeling cheery. Ooh, I suppose that's a cheery thought in one sense, not as cheery in another, but possibly. Dee said to me, FG would have a chance still, if Leo stepped aside as leader and left Simon Coveney to take over. Leo has proven on many occasions to be egotistical. He lost the people a long time ago. I wonder, has he lost people? I don't know. He's not going to step aside as leader. It's not happening. He has to fight the campaign, nor would Simon Coveney want to take over mid-election anyway. That would be a disaster. But I take your point. I think it ties into what Pat Leahy was saying, the idea of, you know, or Jodie Corcoran, I think, was saying that, you know, what are we going to do with Leo? What is the problem? Do you pull him from the campaign? Do you change it? Do you pull him and say, you stay in Dublin? Finally, I'll finish up with Robbie Sargent, who said to me, not understanding why people are shocked that FG may get a slap. Doubt they are that low, but they lose seats for sure. Also doubt SF are that high. He says FF may hit 60, FG mid to late 30s. SF late teens, Green Party 5-7. Yeah, I could see a lot of commentators right now agreeing with that and saying those numbers would stack up somewhere around that. I'm reckoning at current trends, I've Fianna Fáil somewhere around the mid-50s, maybe Fine Gael a little bit higher on that as well than the mid to late 30s. But look, it's all to play for. It's been a great opening weekend to the campaign, that's for sure. And there's going to be a lot more debate to come. So, look, that is it for this episode of the podcast, and I hope you have enjoyed it. If there's anything we're talking about that you would like to discuss or like to have an opinion on, please do contact me. Easiest way on Twitter, which is at Johnny Fallon. That's J-O-N-N-Y Fallon, F-A-L-L-O-N. So it's Johnny without a H. I hope you've enjoyed this. This is a great opening weekend to a campaign for all of us political nerds. As I say, get out the potatoes, get out the popcorn, your Mighty Munch, your snack bars, whatever it is floats your boat. I'll certainly be having a glass of wine tonight. Going to watch the Liverpool United match, fingers crossed. As many of you know, I'm a Pool supporter. So that would round off a great weekend, particularly having an election there. But it is going to be a great couple of weeks coming up. We're going to look again next weekend at how the parties have changed it, what they're adapting to, what they're doing differently, and how they are going to affect change on the campaign trail. And who's up, who's down. And finally, of course, we will be taking any comments that you've got during the week from Twitter to do it. In the meantime, have a great week. Shake lots of hands. Meet lots of people at your door. And please, please be nice to the canvassers on the door. They do keep democracy going. We all say we don't hear from politicians. Well, they're going out there and they're there. And you can complain to them. You can give out to them. Don't mind that. But you know what? Don't just shut them up and run them away. Engage. They're doing a good job, and whatever party they're from, they're volunteering because they believe in something. You know, and it's cold weather out there. God, I've done it enough times, and it's tough. It's a tough couple of weeks. So best of luck to you all, and we'll be catching up again next weekend. Welcome back to the Johnny Fallon podcast on weekend two of general election 2020. We have had debates, policy launches, manifestos and rows as it all begins to heat up and we get to the business end of vote getting. We now have two more opinion polls giving us a very definite trend, and I'm going to look at all of this in detail along with some of the articles that caught my eye this week, and of course a look at some of the comments you have sent in via Twitter. We could be facing into a make or break week for all of the parties. So let's get straight to it and see what's been going on behind the curtains of Electionville.